This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Absolutely. My apologies for everybody who wrote in. You're right. If they're looking for a guest picker for College Game Day, it should be Sark. They should find a way to get Sark there. No better picker than Steve.
How about
Sark,
Mike Price?
What's Mike Price doing now?
He's in Coeur d'Alene.
He's in Coeur d'Alene. Wait, right,
Mike
right.
Price or Mark Price?
Mike Price.
Oh, okay. They should get Mark Price there to hit free throws.
If you ask the Cleveland Cavs,
if you gave Mark Price 100 free throws right now today, 90, how many does he hit?
90 or 91.
Easy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 95. Yeah.
How old is Mark Price? He's got to be
50.
In his 50s.
Oh,
right?
Easily in his 50s.
You don't think he absolutely still hits 90%
for 54 years old.
And I bet his sons
old.
Do as well.
Do you think he still shoots free throws every day?
He was just a head coach at UNC Charlotte.
Oh, he definitely shoots free throws every day. There's no doubt he must.
Kyle, who should be? You really think it should be Clay? Clay?
I think it should. It's going to be tough. He's got a regular season game Friday and Sunday, so I'm not saying it's likely.
Yeah,
but it's possible.
Okay. Is it important to Cougar Nation to get that thing right?
Like, yeah,
if it's true, Bledsoe, you're not going to. If it's true, you're not going
to
be disappointed.
Oh, never.
Okay, good.
Don't even suggest that.
All right. Well, just some of your nonsense earlier.
No, it's not nonsense. I was speaking nonsense. You were speaking nonsense, saying the 92 first round pick or number one overall pick in the 92 draft is more relevant than
a
guy who just got.
Who said relevant? I never said relevant. I just think representing the Coug brand.
Kiss the rings, Brock.
Game days here.
Kiss the rings.
How about Dolph Lundgren?
Dolph Lundgren,
love that we're talking, and Salk has no idea what the guest picker is. I love that.
I can figure it out. I'm not an idiot. I think I can understand and kind of
self-explanatory.
Right? This is not brain surgery we're talking about here. So the guest picker does what exactly?
But usually they've got some connection to that school.
So at the end of the game, end of the show, you already were making fun of Lee Corso putting on the mascot.
It's so wacky. So wacky when he does
that. So they pick all the games that weekend, and they have a star relevant to the
So I don't want to rain on anybody's parade here, okay, Kyle, and especially yours, and the 100,000 are becoming over to Pullman.
Not going
to
happen.
But it is kind of interesting. The list is not terribly long when you're thinking of a possible picker. Right, it's not like you have
Is this the Huskies taking shots after Hope Solo did it?
No.
Calm down.
Look like the list isn't very long.
Let's calm down.
We have to choose between Hope Solo and Jeremy Stevens.
Can we find a bigger criminal to do this for Washington?
I'm not taking any shots.
Stevens drove her drunk in a USA van to the stage, and then Hope Solo stumbled out of there. Go Huskies!
They did Luke Bryan when I was there at Michigan Notre Dame, and then they did Chainsmokers last week, according to Kyle. So I was looking at who's coming to town this weekend, concert wise.
Yeah,
we've got also a lot to choose from.
For where? Loverboy. Coming where?
Loverboy, I think, is doing a casino tour. Yeah, and then Tech N9ne is coming to Seattle. So that would be the two biggest names. A lot Loverboy. To choose from.
Who's going
to
be at the Northern Quest in Spokane? That would probably be your best bet. To get somebody there. Let's see who's going to be in Northern Quest in Spokane.
Get this on the rails.
Is anybody playing Moscow, Idaho? That might be another.
It's homecoming, so someone could be headlining the Kibbe Dome.
Another thing.
How about Dave Pridemore?
Huh? Pridemore for the guest picker?
Oh, he's too stressed out by the whole thing.
Well, the show has to have an end point, right? I mean, our boss, if anybody's ever met our boss, Dave, he takes forever to say anything. He's a huge coug, but I mean, he's like a human rain delay when he starts talking. There's no way they would have enough time on that show for that.
Bill Moose? Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, Brock, here's the question for people. 206-421-3776. Pete Carroll's made a lot of changes in the last year. What's been the most important change he's made? And it could be anything. It could be changing out some of his coaches. It could be a re-emphasis on the identity. It could be the way they've called plays. It could be some of the people they've brought in. It could be
the change in his diet. It could be clearly what it's done for his hair.
It could be the plant-based turn and what it's done. Maybe a new conditioner that he's using for his hair. Anything is on the table. Of all the things the Seahawks have changed since last year, which one has made the biggest impact on their 3-3 and pretty good start here? 206-421-3776. What is the most impactful change Pete Carroll and the Seahawks have made since last year?
Do you have a definitive answer? Can you point to one definitively? And I haven't got a response yet from Cowherd. So I did text him I tried to multitask off the top because we played his sound earlier that this thing was done, right?
Yeah, and it's not just him. He's just representative of a lot of people across the country nationally who wanted to say Pete Carroll was done, which to me was just flat stupid. Honestly, I didn't make, you kept telling it to me in the offseason. I was like, dude, that's a joke. Obviously, you're kidding. And then I went on when we were at spring training, I think. I went on from Arizona with some national show, and they were asking me the same questions. And I was like, are you guys mad?
I'm sitting here at our sister station, the Arizona Sports Network, and if I asked any of these hosts, Arizona Sports, what is it called?
It's the Arizona Sports Station. Arizona Sports Station.
I kind of like Arizona Sports Network, ASN. I kind of like that.
Well,
Arizona Sports Station. And if I asked, honestly, any of them, if I asked Wolf or Doug, Burns or Gambo or any of them, the midday show, any of them, and said, hey, coming into this last season in August, if I'd have sat with you, would you have thought this is kind of the end of the run for Pete? I think they would have been unanimous.
Yeah, but we know, we've talked to them. They're not that bright, Brock. We've talked to those
they
guys.
They are very bright.
They are.
They are very bright. They looked at history. They looked at the history of some of his past spots. They looked at the decline, Mike, over the last 3 years. They looked at a lot of the same nonsense that was said that was not ever playing itself out on the field. They looked at what you and I felt up close and personal, is you can say this, and you can say you want to do this, but you're not. You're not physical.
All
you're
of
not
those
a
things
run
are
team.
True.
All those things are totally true, and that is where I think a lot of the narrative of the offseason came
but
from.
But the idea that Pete Carroll wouldn't be able to self-scout and fix what ailed his team was ridiculous. The idea that Pete Carroll couldn't go young and bring in a whole new crop of people, which he did every year at USC, was ridiculous.
But how did those
the idea that you fire a guy who'd made the playoffs every year after 1 year off was always ridiculous and goes right back to Gross's idea of getting tired of winning.
How good did those young players look, Mike, in 2015, in 2016, in 2017? How good did those young guys look that were drafted, that were going to come in here and be difference makers? How good did Riso Diambo look? How good did Delano Hill look? How good did CJ Procise look? How good did some of these young people look that were supposed to be the next crew that weren't? That weren't developing, that weren't growing, that weren't difference makers. I think there was a fair amount of evidence, especially for those on the outside, Mike, to have some of the opinions that we heard.
Yeah, well, bully for them, because I think they completely overlooked what was actually happening. That a coach of Pete's stature, and there aren't that many of them in the league, deserve the opportunity to right what goes wrong. And when you have Pete's track record and you have his energy, you get the opportunity to try to figure it out. And I think that's what he did this offseason.
And I think most importantly, and this is not necessarily my answer, I'll give you an answer on the field, but I think most importantly, and Pete hit on it with us yesterday talking about his owner, and John Clayton alluded to it an hour ago. I think his owner, very much after last season, was like you and me, and probably a hundredfold more curious and more inquisitive and knowing from the inside that this thing just isn't right, that we just can't keep doing this. It's insanity. It's madness. If we keep all the people in place, if we keep all this scheme in place where players aren't developing, where the offensive line is not emerging and growing, where the run game is not existent and actually one of the worst in the history of the NFL. And I think his owner very much charged Coach Carroll to do something about it and to be aggressive. What did Coach Carroll say to us that he loved about Paul? Go for it, man. Go for it. Be aggressive. You can't go halfway. You cannot be lukewarm, man. You've got to be hot or cold. And in this case, you got to be hot, and you got to be steaming hot to make change and be willing to do it and to really go for it. And they made wholesale changes.
All right. So of those changes, what was the what has been the biggest, most impactful change the Seahawks have made?
Yeah, to me, there's just simply no question about it. It is their offensive identity to run the football. It is their total and utter commitment to it.
So of all the
in a creative, and remember 3 weeks ago, everybody, there's articles I retweeted that want to fire Brian Schottenheimer 3 weeks ago.
Who would have said that?
I don't know. That he was worse than Daryl Bevel.
Well,
my
who
goodness
what?
Gracious.
Nobody would have said that. Are you crazy? Yes. What kind of a moron would have said that?
I think the fire started this whole deal. In this league, if you want to be tough, if you really want to intimidate, if you really want to play a physical game, Mike, you have to be able to move.
So it's Cable and Solari.
Yes.
So it's firing Tom Cable and bringing in Mike Solari.
I think so.
That is the most impactful thing.
If
that's truly what it comes down to for you, it is firing Tom Cable and hiring Mike Solari to fix the offensive line.
Yes, an offensive line that's gone from worst to first the last 4 weeks. Yeah. That you and I watched for years. I just watched it again. They happened to be wearing silver and black. I just watched what Russell was under for the last 2 years, where he could not drop back, where you could not run a run play, where even good running backs were stopped before they could ever get to the line of scrimmage. They were just dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Totally dysfunctional and totally discombobulated. And from the decision-making of who you wanted to bring in, some of the courage and ego and arrogance to say, I can take anything and work with it, to bring in Bradley Sal and Jamarcus Webb, who couldn't play anywhere, and yet you thought you could make them into something, to take D Lyman and draft late picks and think you can make something out of nothing. And then finally, Mike Solari said, no, we're going to take DJ Fluker, and we're going to land on this. And J.R. Sweezy fortunately fell in our lap, and when healthy, well, he can do this, and Britt's a good player, and Dwayne Brown is a Pro Bowl player, and I'm going to take a Fetty and not ask him to do this ridiculous stance and this ridiculous drop and this ridiculous scheme, and I'm going to actually let him fire off and hit people in the mouth, which he wants to do, and it's why he fought here every single practice the last 2 years, because he couldn't do the things that was being asked of him. So yeah, I think I would probably land right now on that commitment to the run and Mike Solari in particular.
206-421-3776. What is it, the one most impactful change the Seahawks and Pete Carroll made since last year? Taylor is in Tacoma. What's up, Taylor?
Good morning, guys.
Morning,
T-Town. I definitely have to say that the changing of the guard and then both guards with Sweezy and Fluker, okay. I think, you know, you can call a run play, and Pete can tell you to keep calling run plays. But when you got Fluker and you got Sweezy, I think it brings not only a whole new meaning, but a whole new, like, feel to what you're going up against compared to what we were doing.
I've said this, Taylor, on the show here for the last 10 years or so, that some of my favorite memories in football, playing the game, were not just throwing touchdown passes and sitting in a shotgun and spreading it out. Oh, man, this is fun, and throwing it all over. Some of my most distinct memories were in a huddle my redshirt freshman year with Corey Dillon and Benji Olsen and Bob Sapp and Olin Krutz and breaking people's will. When you come to a line of scrimmage and you can look across and you look at those guys and they just, they don't want to play. This isn't fun. I don't like Olin Krutz choke slamming me. I don't like Benji Olsen just moving me and demoralizing and humiliating me. It was no fun. You could see that on the other side, and there was nothing like that offensively, where you just felt like, and Mike, it's what we felt in 2012. It's what we felt in 2013. It was Breno Giacomini and James Carpenter and those guys. It weren't great pass blockers, but man, would they maul you and humiliate you. And that is what these Seahawks have done for the last month, in particular with DJ Fluker now in the fold.
206-421-3776. Most impactful change the Seahawks made in this offseason was Suki's in Renton. Good morning, Suki.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Great.
I could go anywhere with this, but I want to say secondary because, to be honest, when the season started, not just the pass rush, but losing Sherman, Thomas, and how thin the secondary looked at first, it seemed like, you know, that was going to be like one of the weakest points. And, you know, the secondary stepped up big, really big. And, you know, especially, you know, Thompson filling it, just, you know, getting his feet wet, and Trey Flowers, you know, complimenting Griffin on the other side. I just believe, you know, it's doing great.
There's no doubt. I mean, Brock, it has been a major, major change in that secondary. I mean, it's four new names. Only Bradley McDougal obviously was playing, I guess, Shaquille Griffin last year. But go back 2 years, and none of these guys are even on the team, right? Justin Coleman shows up, and, you know, they just completely revamped all five members of that secondary. I looked at what the Seahawks have done and changed in the last year, and I would say they made four major changes, okay? They changed their physical identity. They got back to running the ball. They got back to punishing defenses. They got back to knocking out receivers. It's on both sides of the ball, but they made a legitimate decision and turn, so to speak, towards being physical. And when you watch the Oakland game, the first seven plays were runs. The last eight plays were runs. One leads to a first drive or first opening drive touchdown in years. The other finishes off the game in style. But it's almost more about that statement you make by doing it, right?
Yep.
This is why I complain. Why are you so mad that they came out throwing the ball? Because you say you want to run it. And if you say you want to run it, go out and run the first seven run plays like that if you can. I mean, I'm not saying be stupid like Oakland was, third and six, and they were running the ball with Marshawn. That was just giving up.
Right.
But if you have the physical ability to run, great. Go prove to everybody who you are and set the tone for the game. So I think they make a statement. And in the meantime, by the way, they're knocking out receivers left and right in that secondary. Four guys knocked out in 2 weeks. Yeah, I would say they've gotten back to being physical. Number two, they've actually balanced their offense again, Brock. And whether this is about Mike Solari in the offensive line or whether it's about Brian Schottenheimer or Pete Carroll finally figuring it out, but they've run it more than they've thrown it so far this year.
Yep.
They coming into that game, it was almost dead even, 143 to 142 in favor of the run. Right now, they have run the ball 180 times and thrown it 165. They have 15 more runs than passes. And those numbers are even more skewed if you take out the first 2 weeks when, for whatever reason, Pete Carroll hadn't figured out to actually do what he said he wanted to do.
I didn't do a good enough job focusing us in on really the essence of it. We were trying to do a little bit too much. And I tell you, time and time again in performance, if you try to do too much, you usually don't get anything done. And it's we have to stay focused and stay true to who we are and what we are. Well, we're figuring that out now. We haven't done anything yet, but we're getting going.
Yeah, Brock, they're actually now running the ball the way they're. God knows what the heck happened in the first 2 weeks, and maybe they were just missing Fluker, maybe somebody needed to like lobotomize Brian Schottenheimer, whatever. But for since then, they're doing what they're supposed to do. They are legitimately running the ball, balanced offense, and guess what? Russell's quarterback rating over the last couple of weeks has been over 125.
Yep, second only in rushing attempts to the LA Rams.
It has been over 103 of the last four. So you combine what you're doing with the running game with efficient quarterback play and a few big plays like Russell has made, and you end up with an offense that is truly balanced, which is what they want. That's two. Number three, they revamped their secondary, and you know, caller just said it. Suki's absolutely right. The secondary gives up some yards, and I know they did against the Rams' offense, but man, all four starters, haven't they all emerged in their own ways, plus Justin Coleman?
Yeah. Yeah, and if that group keeps getting better, I mean, that's where there is...
Well, shouldn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, just with young players, and they're going to get tested, Mike, more than they ever have. That's why Pete Carroll's saying what he just said. Like, this has been an incredible run for 4 weeks, and he even said it to us yesterday. You know, it's going to get a little tougher with Matthew Stafford and Phillip Rivers,
sure,
and Aaron Rodgers. Those guys are very different than Mitch Trubisky and even Jared Goff at this stage, and certainly Derek Carr behind that line. So it is going to get significantly more difficult for those guys. They're going to give up 300-yard passing. They're going to have some tough days.
Absolutely.
They had a tough day against the Rams.
All true. But, Brock, look at them sort of individually and where they're at. Flowers hits, and he battles. McDougal's a leader. He's one of the best players on the team right now. Tedrick has been a hitting machine of free safety, even if he doesn't have Earl's speed or experience. I know the guy can hit.
Yep.
And Griffin almost never gets thrown on. And in the meantime, Coleman might be the best nickel guy they've ever had. He's one of the best in the league at it. So yeah, that's a rebuilt unit, and yep, they could end up being really, this is all without a pass rush. Put a pass rush onto this team, and how much better does that secondary look?
You
all
just saw
it
last week. Derek Carr didn't complete a pass past 10 yards.
That's exactly right. And then finally, and this is the last thing I think they did this offseason, they changed the, you know, we heard the changing of the guards. They did it in the leadership category as well. It's not just that we haven't had crazy sideline blow-ups, right, or players criticizing their teammates or coaches like we got with Sherm last year and Michael Bennett at times. It's more that we're actually just seeing the next generation and grow up and grow into the leadership roles. And Bobby and Jaron Reed, I think, are the best examples. But throw in McDougal, throw in Brown.
Dwayne Brown.
Oh, thank you.
Gosh,
I'm trying to think of the guy's name. Dwayne Brown.
Wow.
DJ Fluker. I mean, like, they just have so many guys whose voices seem like they've grown. And when we asked Pete about that yesterday, he was pretty giddy about it.
Yeah. From our perspective, it seems like that's happening again this year as some of the veterans are out. And, you know, I know some of the names we think are stepping up into that void as leaders. Who are some of the guys, and especially the young guys, you see stepping up into that?
Well, first, I think you're right. You know, I think there has been a transition that started, like I've said to you, last year during the season. You know, as guys were leaving, guys were coming in and starting to, you know, figure out where they fit.
He goes on then to name nearly every one of the players that we've been talking about.
Right on that, Salk.
How rare is that?
It says McDougald, Wagner, Brown, Baldwin.
He mentioned all of those guys. Yep. And look, you can't have that unless you...
Jeremy couldn't lead, Mike.
That's
Michael
right.
Bennett won the Super Bowl. Frank Cliffhaver won the Super Bowl. Those guys won the Super Bowl. You didn't.
He was careful in this part.
That started, like I've said to you, last year during the season, you know, as guys were leaving...
These guys were
it started last year as
leaving.
Guys left.
That's Dwayne Brown exactly right. Can't lead. He hadn't been there. He wasn't part of that thing and that run up and all the success that they had. The guys that had the pelts on the wall, they were here.
Yep.
Those are the guys that had it. They had the equity. These young guys did not as long as those guys were there, but once they exit stage right, you enter and have the opportunity to have a whole lot more voice.
206-421-3776, Eric's in Covington. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, guys. For me, it's twofold. I totally agree that getting Solari in there, fixing that O-line was big. But I also think that getting rid of Sherman and getting rid of Bennett was huge. Just remember, we started the season 0-2, and Russ was struggling a little bit. Could you imagine what it would have been like in that locker room if Sherman was there? Mm. The crap he would have been starting. He would have gotten Baldwin 2 backpacks, gotten him on his side fully, and just been, you know, creating chaos.
Can you imagine the loyalty you could get from Doug Baldwin with 2 backpacks?
He would have gotten 2 or 3.
This 2?
He would have converted him, and it would have just been crazy.
You talk about leading a guy to darkness. You get Doug Baldwin 2 backpacks, he'd follow you to the edge of the earth. Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
Appreciate the phone call,
I think
Eric.
That getting rid of those guys is really, really important.
I appreciate it, Eric. Thank you.
Can you picture Doug with a backpack on his back up front, too?
Oh, you do think that way. I imagine like one on each shoulder, like one slung on the
single
right.
Single strap.
Yeah, single strap on each shoulder.
But it's got to be King Louie embroidered with Sherman 25.
I don't know. I thought the $30 Beast Mode backpack pretty much keeps Doug happy for life. 206-421-3776. The most impactful change the Seahawks made in the offseason was? Steve, go ahead.
I think the most impactful thing was addition by subtraction.
Yep.
At the moment that the words, all that kumbaya stuff came out of Richard Sherman's mouth, he was done here.
Yep.
Because it's all that kumbaya stuff that got him a Super Bowl ring. It's all that kumbaya stuff that sets a tone for the youthful enthusiasm and the desire and the hunger that Pete wants in his team. And that's not all abstract stuff. That's all real stuff. That's how he won at USC. That's his comfort zone. He needs that kind of inspiration, that kind of youthful desire in order to make these teams work.
Great.
I think this year, reloading this team has been right in the middle of his comfort zone. And I think if you caught him in a weak moment and asked him, he'd say he's reveling in it.
Does that player initiated or team?
It's always Pete. It's always Pete. So we always go into the kumbaya meet room and sit there in kumbaya.
Do they do much good?
They're effective, you know. I think just a different element for some guys, you know. Older guys, we kind of see it every year, so the younger guys give them something different.
Yeah, you don't want to keep that guy around.
That cut gets harder to listen to every time.
You don't want to keep that guy around?
I hate Richard Sherman!
With more perspective, it gets harder to hear.
Does it? How about that guy?
Can I just say this too quickly, and I know we're up against it. It's not just the young, youthful guys, Steve, if you're still listening. It's also, you bring in DJ Fluker that's been in 2 organizations. You bring in Sweezy that went away to another organization. It's Dwayne Brown that was with another organization that didn't empower him. And it's those guys that have some experience that come here too and go, man, you got pretty darn good. Like, this coach loves you. This place gives you everything. You had an owner that just gave you cleared the path for all the success. Like, you guys... You know, I think there's some benefit to bringing in some of those young vets that have been other places that can appreciate that message and appreciate what they got here, too.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, you can throw all these things together, and it's obviously difficult to come up with just one. We'll get back to the calls here in a few minutes, but I just, when you see the amount of change that has gone on, it continues to just make me ill that there were people in the offseason who thought this thing was over and that Pete Carroll was going to be done. It just never made sense to me at all, and I think right now, that just looks completely ridiculous. We got good news, bad news, no news, including a completely different take on what Adam Silver said yesterday. We'll do that coming up in 20 minutes, right after Washington Wednesday next here on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, with some words yesterday that a lot of people are interpreting as bad news for Seattle. I can give you a different, more positive view on that coming up here in 15 minutes. And good news, bad news, no news. But right now, it's Wednesday, and it's Washington Wednesday.
Washington Wednesdays. Every Wednesday throughout the college football season.
This is back-to-back weeks in the house. Getting a chance to talk to you on these Washington Wednesdays, being in on Wednesdays to talk about the Huskies and where they're at. And you know, I lean a little bit in this segment every Wednesday into just some of my peers in college football and some of the vibe and some of the interaction that I get with them as they look at the Washington Huskies. But, you know, we all got that interaction yesterday. Kirk Herbstreit joined the show. You know, obviously he's the voice of college football and has the largest, I think, reach on a national perspective. And he shares a lot of my sentiment, and that is that that Washington is close but not dominant. And I think really that is what we have felt in these 7 games. For all the conversation that we just had about the Seattle Seahawks, for everything they've done physically and dominating the line of scrimmage and six sacks against Oakland with their defensive line and in a run game that is just mowing people down. That's been one of the best in the NFL over the last 4 weeks. You know, that was some of the expectations, I think, this season, Mike, for Washington and what they could be. It was Trey Adams. It was Miles Gaskin. It was dominating the line of scrimmage. Well, that's been a little bit of a work in progress. I thought effective at Oregon. I thought the four running backs were all pretty darn effective and played pretty well. But I don't think at any stretch they've been totally dominant, and it's certainly not against the Ducks. And then defensively is probably where their biggest limitations have been. A group up front that that was thin going into the season has gotten even thinner. It's going to rely now on a couple true freshmen that they're going to have to play this weekend against a ranked Colorado team that can run it, that can throw it, that does have QB run involved. And while I think some of the stars have still played at a high level, Taylor Rapp and Byron Murphy, I think Jake Browning has played better and better and played one of his best games ever as a Husky when they needed it the most down in Eugene, Oregon. I think, unfortunately, it's been that line of scrimmage that we've watched the other team in town start to dominate, start to make a turn in the Seattle Seahawks, and a line of scrimmage that that really was at its very best 2 years ago for the Huskies as they marched to a national playoff game that that really just has not been that dominant level, especially defensively in parts and even not even parts, in huge stretches of this season. 100-yard rushers, not nearly the sacks, not impacting the quarterback, not allowing Taylor Rapp and a dominant secondary to really come to life and be the playmakers they can be. Because up front, teams have just said, no, we'll run for five. We'll run for five. 100-yard rusher with Arizona State, 100-yard rusher with UCLA, 100-yard rusher with the Oregon Ducks. And it just gets hard to, you know, just gets hard to dominate and win against good teams, especially on the road, if you don't dominate the line of scrimmage.
Well, there you go. That is a national look at what some of Brock's friends in the business are saying. Did they give you their undivided attention, or were they out walking their dog while you asked them about these things?
Dude's got fine.
Three golden retrievers.
I just want to know. I mean, I just, you know.
Some, Mike, that have great hair like Coach Carroll and Herbie. There's some that can multitask and walk three dogs. And
sure.
By the way, Herbie also referencing Coach Peterson that now you've got a couple losses. Is the season lost? Are they done? Here was Herbie with us yesterday.
Anytime a team has national championship, conference championship, realistic goals, like in August, and those goals all of a sudden start to get squashed. I've seen so many teams, so you guys just lose control, and all of a sudden they become a different team the last 4 or 5 weeks because they start thinking about the NFL. They start, we're no longer in the mix, and they lose their focus. And Chris Peterson is probably, other than Nick Saban, he probably pays attention to detail as well as anybody, and he'll make sure this team still is focused and about it, and what kind of injuries, what kind of goals might be gone. He'll get them locked in.
I would probably agree with that. This is sort of like what we were talking about last week, Brock. It's a good thing Chris Peterson's their coach and not me. Like, it's a good thing, Chris.
For a number of reasons.
For many reasons.
I mean, like, where do we want to start?
An understanding of football to start. But, like, it's a good thing that he has his personality and not mine. I would have a difficult time refocusing after that loss to Oregon.
Yep.
I would feel like, yeah, we came in this season with a goal. That goal is now toast. And I would have a difficult time concentrating and giving it my all for the rest of the year.
Would you wear the shirt that he was wearing during the press conference?
Was it Stay Positive? No, I don't think I'd ever wear that shirt, no matter what. But
Come on, we could get you. We get if you like lost a bet, maybe you'd wear it.
That's not Mike's message.
That's not. No, like, hey,
this stay is, negative. What about a stay negative shirt?
That might
stay real. How about that?
Thank you. It's not negativity, Lydia. It's different. Stay realistic.
Oh, okay.
Stay realistic.
And you're just being real.
It's a good thing.
I think Stay Real's got a good ring.
It's a good thing he's their coach. Yes. The same way I was saying it's a good thing Russell Wilson's the quarterback and not me. Like, I would have frozen out Doug Baldwin long ago. I've been like, yeah, dude, cool. I'm not throwing you the ball ever. Russell's not like that. He threw him the ball eight times.
We should do a segment weekly of things we're glad Salk doesn't do. We're glad he's not the Seahawks quarterback.
Right.
We're glad he's not UW's head coach.
True.
Right. We're glad he doesn't produce game day because he's even know what that show
picker.
Is. Yep.
That's I'd be right. a great guest picker.
Yes.
You wouldn't know what they're asking of you.
I wouldn't understand how to make a pick between one team or another.
You wouldn't know who's going to win any college games.
Neither does anybody else. Nobody knows who's going to win games. That's why gambling exists. You just pick a team.
Any surprise, by the way, that my traveler down here to the desert, who's
Boy
on,
Howdy?
On the Big Bird, he's going to land, I think, back in Seattle about 10. So it's just a little whirlwind trip for him and I to tape a couple
Howdy
podcasts.
Howdy can fly unaccompanied?
Yeah, for sure. Huh. Yeah, but he's all good. Any surprise of just how disappointed he was in that game Saturday with Oregon, that Oregon has already closed the gap. You know, really, and I think there's a bunch of that perspective from a Husky side of things. Like, man, I thought year whatever this is for Pete, and certainly year four for Browning and for Gaskin, that you would separate yourself even more. The Cristobal first year as a head coach, that, you know, there should have been more distance. That game shouldn't have been so close. That game shouldn't have been so hyper-competitive. Where were kind of the physical advantages and the physical mismatches? And to that, I would say that's unrealistic. You know, maybe 2 years ago with Elijah Qualls and Greg Gaines and Avita Vea, much like in 2013 with the Seahawks D-line of Averill and Bennett and Clem and those guys, you know, that's just hard to find. That's going to be the single hardest thing. And Chris knew it going into this job, and certainly sustaining it in this conference is, are you ever going to have that kind of difference makers up front? Because if you want games to get out of hand and you really want to dominate people in college football, Ohio State, Alabama, those teams down there, they've got huge disparity with their defensive linemen against O-linemen, and this and the Huskies just don't have it. And that has kind of been exposed all season long, really been exposed the last month, as I say, with all those 100-yard rushers against you, and certainly was against Oregon that got after him at the line.
So how did that happen?
Well. How did that happen? I think Boy Howdy's going to tell you, much like in our Seahawks conversations, well, you haven't recruited well enough. You don't have the next Vita Vea. You know, you don't have those guys. And they're going to say, yeah, they're hard to find. But these two true freshmen got to be what Greg Gaines said they were. You know, Greg Gaines saying yesterday after practice, these guys are way better than any of us were as freshmen. Like Greg Gaines saying, when I came in here, I had nowhere near their strength, nowhere near their skill set, nowhere near their talent. And these guys just got to play and grow up and grow in experience. So you've got to replenish it that way. These guys got to be difference makers for you because you're not going the JUCO route. You don't get the grad transfer opportunities, so you've got to grow and develop that next batch.
Text message, Salk, if you were the Seahawks quarterback, you wouldn't throw Doug the ball simply because you couldn't throw it 15 yards downfield. Well, that's true. That would be part of my problem, that's for sure. Why was Doug, did you hear Doug, by the way, after the game? Hey, Doug, how come you had 91 yards on 6 catches because we finally threw the ball my way? Really? Come on, man.
Oh, Lydia missed the whole backpack thing. Lydia, were you aware of the whole backpack conversation?
You guys played that sound for me when I talked to you on the phone, and I was surprised by it.
Yeah, well, what is this? Buy a guy a backpack,
but
and
I told
he's yours
you,
for life.
I'm really into school and learning, so I can kind of support that. Right. If someone bought me a backpack, I'd probably really have loyalty for life.
Well, if it was, like, filled with books and things that you could learn.
Coach
no,
Carol,
just the potential. I can fill it with potential.
There you
go.
Did you hear Great Hair Carol yesterday with us? Kind of take a little, those receivers, DBs, they always divas. They're always whining them.
Oh, yeah. Somebody always says they're not getting the ball enough. Yeah, that's going to happen. But we just want to sit there and run it. Well, Doug, I'm so glad they finally threw the ball your way. I couldn't be happier for you. All right, coming up next, Brock, everyone says, you want to keep it real? I will keep it real. Everyone is saying that this is bad news for Seattle in the NBA. I think I could actually read it the other way. I'll be positive. Next, here on Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
This is funny. We need Audi to do this tomorrow. If you buy Doug a backpack would be the next sequel to If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. Anybody who's been reading children's books like I have thinks that's funny. Everyone else probably doesn't get it. That's okay. What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
A Seattle City Council member is taking shots at Paul Allen's philanthropic efforts immediately after his death.
This is just so ugly, man. This is just such horrible news. So I think you and I were doing the afternoon show, weren't we? Well, actually, it was Wyman and I, but you're doing the afternoon show on the FM side. And I remember when Barbara Bush passed away, we had the same conversation with the same council member here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Have the guts to say it when they're alive. And to do so the day after they passed was... it's beyond bad. It's gross.
Yeah, we're not going to dignify this by saying the name of the council person. You can probably figure it out if you were in any way involved in Seattle politics or if you saw this making the rounds yesterday. But this person decided to take shots at Paul Allen and essentially a real rip job on the day after he passed away while the rest of the city was celebrating all of his accomplishments and saying that he was not charitable enough, that he shouldn't have spent money on the things he did, that we shouldn't have given the city should not have participated or the county in funding Century Link Field. And I just think, yeah, you're right. Same person who took shots at Barbara Bush right after she died. Is that really what you want your brand to be? Hey, how are you known? Oh, I'm the person who takes shots at people after they die. Well, the world mourns people. I usually take that opportunity to take shots at them.
But never when they're alive.
Yeah, and that's what I said. Look, some of these criticisms of Paul Allen, I don't personally agree with them all. But I understand. Look, we are all allowed to criticize people and how billionaires spend their money and whether or not there should be billionaires. These are real conversations that intelligent people have. But we have them while those people are alive. If you want to take a shot at the way Paul Allen has spent his money, take it a month ago. You have every right in the world to have disagreements with Paul Allen. And as a city council person, that's part of your job. He's changed the way this city will look and act forever with what happened in South Lake Union. And by the way, let's not forget, the man tried twice to donate that land as a park, and twice city voters decided they didn't want that. And then he decided to build South Lake Union and Amazon and everything else that's happened in this city since then. If you have issues with him for any of those reasons, by all means, those are fair to criticize him for a month ago. Not the day he dies. Oh, I just thought of it. Oh, boy, I'm sorry. I didn't even think about it until the man died. That's lunacy. And that is bad, bad hooju.
Good news, bad news, no news.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, he also commented on Paul's passing. He had some nice words about what he did for the Trailblazers, but also reiterating the NBA has no plans to expand at this time.
What we're most focused on is ensuring that we have 30 strong teams right now, and we still have work to go. So not only if you expand, does it dilute revenue, but it dilutes talent. I love Seattle personally. I think it's a great market. They're doing all the right things in terms of building a new arena or revitalizing Key Arena. It's not on the agenda right now.
All right, so I know a lot of people think this is very negative. I will say that for now, this is almost good news. At least that's how I hear it, Brock. Okay, they're not going to expand. But what are the other two things he said? One, the NBA is focused on trying to make sure that all 30 teams right now are sustainable and they still have work to do in that category. Well, if that's the case, then that means that there are teams that are not sustainable. The third thing he said is that Seattle is doing all the right things in order to get themselves a team.
Yeah.
So if there are teams that aren't sustainable, they aren't going to expand, and Seattle is doing all the right things, I don't know, I read between the lines and say, great, maybe there's going to be a team that relocates here sometime in the near future.
Yeah, this is not bad news. This is clarifying news. This is making it very clear. The NBA is not expanding. The 30 owners are not going to cut the checks two more ways. 32, they're not. They're not going to divide the pie anymore. They're not. In fact, I think that there's some owners that would like to shrink the league because there are two or three teams that aren't in great markets, whose attendance is down, whose communities are not supporting the product. And, you know, Jeff Van Gundy talked about that when he joined us a week ago, Mike, and talked about the experience. I don't think if I have to hedge my bet, I don't think this league is expanding. I think the franchise that comes to Seattle will be one that comes from the South, who have proven and shown that they don't support it and they don't want it. So I don't think in any way that was bad news. I think it was only clarifying news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Astros are being accused of cheating in both the ALDS and the ALCS.
Wow, how about that? Good news. We need a good little conspiracy. You need a little juice on and off the field for baseball to be at its very, very best. Good news.
Yeah, I will say this is actually not surprising news. It's bad news. Obviously, any of these things aren't great for the game. But from everybody you talk to who've been around the Astros organization, they are not shocked by this. That is a team that constantly looks to get an edge. And I know there are people in and around the Mariners organization who thought that this was the case during the season. There was a little tete-a-tete and I forget who it was, with the Mariners and Astros at some point this year. Was here, right? Who was that?
Why do you say it's called a tete for tete?
Tete to tete.
Tete to tete?
Tete to tete.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before, Kyle?
I mean, I know the tete offensive.
Yeah, it's yes, it's very much a tete offensive.
Oh, okay.
All it's right. Nothing to do with that.
Oh, it's like a tit for tat?
Anyway.
I've heard tit for tat.
Okay, well then I probably got it wrong.
No, that's okay. You don't get these things wrong.
Oh, I don't?
No, you're probably right. Brock and I are probably wrong.
Right.
Possible I'm wrong.
We're not as learned as you.
In any event, no one's surprised by this. The Astros tend to do this as an organization. Huh?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Lane Kiffin offered a scholarship to Matt Leinart's 11-year-old son.
What are we doing here? What are we even doing? It's like 5'7", he's 11, he hasn't even hit puberty. What are we doing?
Is this like the later rounds of the baseball draft now? We're just like tossing people.
I mean, didn't we
like,
see this? Who was it? Tate Martell? Wasn't he the
Sark
kid?
Sark did it at UW.
Where is he going? Where is he?
He's at Ohio State.
How's he doing?
I think he's a backup there. He's kind of a running QB.
Is he going to be good?
Guess what? He's little.
Yeah.
So I don't. This is dumb.
I tell you what, man. I was out at Avery's Shooting Kitty Icebergs practice for soccer yesterday. I saw a couple scouts out there looking at Violet on Avery's team. I'm pretty sure that they may make her an offer to come play soccer somewhere soon. She's six, but
you're Matt Leinart.
She looked good.
Aren't you mad about this? You just put a target on my kid's back for your own publicity stunt?
Yeah. Good point, Kyle. That's a good tip for Tat right there. For Tat.
It's Tat a Tat, dude.
Tat a Tat.
French for face to face.
Great. Thank you. I knew you were right.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Well, you make me feel like I don't know what I'm, like I got. No. I started questioning myself.
No, we weren't questioning
you. Did I get this wrong?
Don't ever question yourself.
All right.
Stop with the self-doubt, Mike.
Stay real, Mike. Stay real.
I got all kinds of self-doubt.
And you can look as good as Pete when you get all dolled up and dressed up.
Pete looks so good, yes.
The city of Pullman is expecting a record-breaking turnout for College Game Day on Saturday. People are texting Brock, calling for 100,000 people.
That's so awesome. And I'm so
I don't know how it's possible.
I am so fascinated to see the Jim Moore, Dave Pridemore, Kyle Brown, super cougs of the world that have always, you know, just had to like, oh, we're over here. We're kind of quiet. We just kind of do our own things. We don't get game day. We just travel crimson everywhere. And then you get the show. Yeah. I just saw the email from Captain Wild Bill Stevens, you know, that the truck's coming in. There's like the shoot at noon today. Game day truck's arriving. The bus is arriving. It's just going to be awesome. Great news.
I don't know, man. It's bad news. I know that everybody thinks right now it's great. I know it's exciting for this week, but long term, it's going to screw up the idea of being a Coug. The only thing the Cougs can do to salvage this weekend is lose in heartbreaking fashion.
Stay real.
Heartbreaking, like last second or total blowout?
Like miss a 37-yard field goal to win it?
That.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a couple of those.
Much more like that. Oh. Yeah. That's what the Cougs need to do. Whatever you do, don't win this game.
But be ahead,
It would change
be ahead by like three touchdowns.
Sure, yeah. Blow a game late. Do some really dumb stuff. Throw when you should be running.
Boom!
A way to lose this thing late.
Stop,
that's the only thing they can do.
We don't need any extra juju in that direction.
You don't need to change. You don't want to change. You love being a Coug.
Yeah.
You love your life the way it is.
Underdog.
Why do you want things to change? You don't want things to change. You love
life. They're changing. Game day is coming. It's changed.
You love life. You love the way your life is going. Yeah, don't make any changes. LOL, the way Salk said the definition made it sound like he knew the saying and how to use it, but had no idea what it meant. I know the saying. Yeah. I don't know the translation of it.
Sure.
I don't speak French.
Yeah.
Jeez, what do you want in my life? Marco Red Sox accused the Red Sox. Yeah, but there was something else with the Mariners that we didn't know what it was at the time, but I remember hearing later that they were kind of concerned that there was some sign stealing going on. It might have been Wade LeBlanc.
It was Wade.
Is that what it was? Was he upset with the Astros?
I think so.
There you go.
They knew his pitches.
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been it. They knew his pitches.
The Frenchman, tete for tete.
Dang it!
All right, I got to hear some details on London from Lydia next, and then we're going to buzz around the NFL and Russell's fit in a league that is changing by the moment. It's all next here on Brock and Salk.